This week's episode is different than the others. Many times during the interview, I found myself at a loss for words. And I guess that when it comes to death and losing a loved one, sometimes there are no right words or any words at all. This week's episode is dedicated in memory of Hanalei Bat Shmuel, the woman of valor that'll be discussed here today.
My name is Barry Mitzman. A few years ago, I was able to do it all. But when illness struck, my life was turned completely upside down. The smallest of tasks became the biggest of challenges. But now that I'm on the road to healing, I ask myself, will I ever be able to once again do it all? Do I even want to do it all? WOV is an exploration of what we as women can do to create our best selves and to be able to lead a great life, a happy life, a WOV life.
This week's episode is sponsored by From Head to Hose, a woman-owned business who is all about helping women look and feel beautiful. They have a beautiful storefront in the heart of Flatbush, as well as a website stocked with a large selection of hosiery, accessories, and clothing at great prices. Check them out and their store at 1717 Avenue M, on Instagram at @fromhead2hose, and on their website, fromheadtohose.com. That's FromHeadToHose.com. Death is something that we often see around us, and it impacts us in different ways depending on which part the disease played in our lives. In this week's episode, Ricky Steiner joins us to discuss her experience of caring for her mother, losing her, and learning to live without her. Hi, Ricky. Thanks so much for joining us today. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and one thing that you love about yourself.
Hi, I'm Ricky. Thanks so much for having me. I live in New York. I'm just kind of your average girl living in the city. I work in marketing. And one thing that I love about myself is that I find the small things really important in life. I remember that famous saying of like, don't forget the forest for the trees and all of that. But I like the trees and I like the leaves and I like looking at those things and learning from them. And I like that about myself.
You're the type that stops and smells the roses?
Every single time without fail. My mom used to make fun of me a lot because I have this weird thing with shadows. I studied art in college and I did a lot of projects about shadows because I thought it was really cool that you would look at something, but then in different lighting or with a different perspective, you can see something in a completely different way. And she used to laugh at me because I used to send her all these random pictures of shadows all the time. And she was like, only you would like stop and look at something, but then look to see if it creates an interesting shadow. Like, who does that?
I think that's beautiful. Personally, I mean, I would laugh at you also. But I am, yeah. I am that person that didn't even notice that the roses were there. Because that literally happened.
And that's what she was like. So we had this weird dynamic of I would be like, hey, mom, look at that crazy thing over there to the left. And she would be like, Ricky, what do you even talk? Like, how does your brain work? Like, who looks over there? And that was our constant back and forth.
So your mother, you said she was. So that implies that you lost her, correct?
I did. Yes.
So my mother, it's an awkward thing to like ask. I didn't really know quite how to ask it, you know? But if you can tell us a little bit about that journey.
So my mother passed away in January. I honestly couldn't even tell you the exact date if I tried. I have this weird thing, dates, and I never remember them. She was diagnosed with cancer almost 3 years ago, I guess. Yeah, it would be 3 years in February. We were originally told by her doctors that she doesn't really have cancer. Her tumors have cancer, and it would be like no big deal, surgery, you know, radiation, recovery. She went and needed chemo, nothing. But even from that time 3 years ago, I had this like crazy sense in my gut, and I just knew I was going to lose her. I walked into, I was in therapy at the time for anxiety. I walked into my therapist's office like a year into this journey, and I said to her, "We need to start talking about the fact that I'm going to lose my mom." And she was like, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "We have to talk about this, because when the time comes, I need to be ready." Flash forward, things were not clear cut. She experienced a lot of complications. Her tumor was in a very, very specific area. I was later told that it was like a 1 in a billion shot. Her tumors were something called sarcomas, which keep popping up over time, and they're very fast growing. She had a scare almost exactly a year ago to this day. It was last week, a year ago, where I was called home in the early morning. My parents had actually been trying to call me home to come home throughout the night. It was the one time I fell asleep early. At 5 a.m. I spoke to them, and my dad was like, "You gotta come home. It's happening." My mom said goodbye to me on the phone, and I was like shaking, crying, like, "Why are you saying goodbye to me? Like, I'm gonna see you in a few hours." Like, I couldn't even figure it out. Ran home. My brother ran home from Israel. We had this like crazy miracle where she was able to bounce back from literal death's door, and we received 5 months with her. I stayed home in Cleveland, where I'm from originally, for 5 months taking care of her. We had people coming over at night, like nurses and such, to stay over because she needed actual 24/7 care. But during the day, it was all me, and I dedicated 5 months of my life to solely just taking care of her. I was working full time at the same time remotely, which is insane. I don't recommend it. I stayed with her. It was intense and traumatic and difficult, but also inspiring and life changing and incredible. And I'm very grateful for that time, but it's also incredibly difficult to think back on, because it's like, not only did I lose my mom, who honestly was my best friend in the entire world, and I feel that loss very deeply every day, but I'm still trying to figure out how to bounce back from these like 5 months of living on peak adrenaline, like the most fulfilling 5 months of your life, right? Because I'm like literally taking care of someone, literally, quite honestly, saving somebody's life. And then you come back to normal life and everything kind of seems meaningless. And that's kind of the journey I'm on now, is like figuring out this weird thing of Avelu, which is weird. It is so weird. But then also figuring out what life kind of is, because I had a lot of meaning and now I have a lot less, because I'm just not at that place anymore.
I mean, it's just hard, because when you think of somebody taking care of a parent, generally, those adults are middle-aged or even older. Yeah. And you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say. Like, I can't even wrap my head around it.
I had my 26th birthday in the middle of this whole craziness. It was a very strange experience. For a while, I even forgot that I turned 26, because my mind was in this vacuum. I forget a lot of things past, because those 5 months are a complete vacuum. The weird thing is, my family used to always joke about, there's only me and my brother, and my family would always joke about like, haha, like Ricky's going to be the one to take care of us when we're older. Because the truth is, I went through this somewhat with 3 out of 4 of my grandparents, which is also a crazy thing. In 8th grade, my mom used to pick me up from school, and I used to go with her to the nursing home in the area in Cleveland so I could feed my grandmother dinner, because my grandmother was refusing to eat and I was the only one who could get her to eat. I was in 8th grade. Like, that's not normal.
No. Wow.
But I just always was that kind of person, I guess. So when it came time to it, like, my father and I talk about this all the time. I never actively decided to stay. I never said, hey, I'm going to stay here. In fact, for a long time, I was trying to figure out how to help them hire full-time care so I could go back to my life. But I just stayed. It happened. And in the beginning, a lot of the things that I had to do were really scary. A lot of medical things are scary, but you just, I wrote about it once that it's really incredible as humans what we can get used to. And I really saw that in such a short time. I just adapted really fast. I had to grow up really fast. I had to adapt really fast and to figure it out. And our minds allow us to do that. And it was a really cool experience of getting to see that firsthand. Like I was being tested so in such a clear way as a person. And it was almost like an out of body experience of like watching myself get more and more used to all the things that really scared me.
Okay. My mind is just like, okay. I knew this was going to be an intense conversation, but like I follow you on social media, and it was from the social media and your concept of Avelut Diaries, which Avelut in Hebrew means the Jewish mourning period, which is approximately 1 year, where you're restricted from doing different things because of the period of losing a loved one. But I didn't know much about what happened before.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was crazy.
I started sharing stuff on Instagram during closer to the end of things, but obviously I was only able to share so much because I was frankly just so busy and so caught up. But it became I actually only started using Instagram stories during this experience, because every time I would go to the hospital, which to be honest, because of certain complications, would happen roughly every 2 to 3 days, I would automatically upload my mom's Hebrew name on Snapchat, Instagram stories, instead of Facebook, because it just felt like an easier, quick, like, here I can get people to daven right away. And it was an incredible tool. And then slowly from there, I started posting things while I was in the hospital. And I started posting things like when we were at home or coming home, and it became like a way for me to update people. Okay, we're in the hospital. Okay, we're here. And it became really helpful for my family, because all of a sudden my father would run into someone in the grocery store in Shul, and they would just say, I follow Ricky on Instagram. I know what's going on, so I don't need to ask you any questions, which is honestly one of the most comforting things on the planet, because we were all losing our minds and no one wants to talk about it. And then slowly
everyone wants to know, and everyone say, oh, and how is this going? And how is she feeling? And all that stuff. That stuff is just like, okay, can we talk about something normal for like 5 seconds?
Exactly. And I know I've spoken to a lot of people about this. So I know a lot of people connect to this idea. When you're going through something intense, not necessarily death related, just any kind of big negative, intense experience, when someone asks you, hi, how are you? It is the most stressful experience of your life, because you can't say I'm terrible, or you can if you have more guts than I do, and you're not going to lie and say I'm okay. You all know you're not okay. So you're just stuck. Like people would ask me if I'm okay, and I would just sit there in this like weird twilight zone of like, oh my God, how do I answer this question? And I would just be, I still get stressed out, because there are obviously days now that still are very dark for me and very bleak. It would be impossible for it not to be. And a random friend, anybody could ask me, how are you? And they're just saying it in passing. And I'm sitting there and my head is spinning like, oh my God, what do I say? Do I tell them? Do I just say I'm okay? But then am I lying? Like, do I say things are like, I can't, it's an impossible question.
It's a really uncomfortable question, especially when people don't realize how uncomfortable of a question it is.
Yeah.
They were just wanted you to say good and just go and move on with your day.
The first thing I've been blessed, and it sounds weird, but I have been blessed too, that a couple people have reached out to me for advice on what to do when a friend of theirs have lost somebody. How do they handle it? Because a lot of people my age obviously are not used to losing a close loved one themselves, but be a friend losing a close loved one. And the first thing I tell every single person is, don't ask them how they are. They are obviously really bad. So don't even bother. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to answer it. Don't do not ask them that question. Every single time, like, these people tell me after the fact, like, thank you for giving me that piece of advice because I didn't ask. And turns out, like, 3 days later, they were like, hey, by the way, everyone asked me how I'm doing. I can't answer that question. And I really appreciate that you didn't.
Oh, wow. So you're just really, by sharing your experience, not only were you able to update people, but you were also able to impart advice and help other people.
Which is, that's the crazier part to me. When I first started sharing my actual writing, I started sharing my actual writing on Facebook first. I went through this crazy experience where I had like close to 1,000 friends on Facebook, and then I freaked out and deleted hundreds. And my goal was to get down to like 200. I went like berserk. But because I wanted to be able to share like very, very, you know, unedited, real writing. And then that slowly but surely filtered onto my Instagram, which before then had just been, as you would expect any young 20-year-old's Instagram to be. And then people started reaching out to me, and I was like, wait a minute, what's happening? And then strangers, so-called, started following, and I was like, wait a minute, what's happening? And then we got to where we are today, where my account is still, thank God, very small. But people are finding me, and people are reaching out to me and asking me for advice and asking me, you know, really deep personal questions about how to deal with their situations, or telling me how much their writing is helping them, or telling me about how they lost their father or mother or somebody else, and how they read my writing and really connect to it. And it's like mind blowing to me. My father told me that a couple people in Shoal, because that's where like he has his social life, that a couple people in Shoal have told him that they like follow me obsessively. And I just sit here and I'm like, what is happening? This is crazy. I still view it as like, I'm just writing a post and a few of my friends will see it and maybe they'll like it. I don't view it as anything else.
Right. But in reality, you're really imparting knowledge for people who don't know much about this topic. I actually have a few questions, if that's okay.
Yes, absolutely.
What would you say was the most beneficial thing that you did to prepare yourself for the loss?
Definitely beginning to talk about it in therapy, even though it was way earlier than things even got bad. I was actually already out. I graduated therapy, so to speak, at that time because of like where my anxiety level was. I was already out of therapy by the time things got really bad, but I had worked on this really carefully for months. And when I first got home, my father and brother kept saying to me, how are you like this? How are you functioning? How are you handling things? What's happening? Like, you're a child. And I said to them, I dealt with it in therapy. And they were like, how did you know to do that? And I was like, I have no idea, but I just did anyway. That was extremely helpful. It was also extremely helpful that my family is very, very open and always has been. So I could talk, once my mom was, you know, awake and functioning as much as she could, I could have these very real conversations with her because that's how we always had been. So I talked to my mom about death. I talked to her about what she wanted. The Shabbos before, she was near the end, she was unresponsive for almost a month. And I think I'm bad at timing. And her last Shabbos of being kind of awake, I was with her in the hospital, and we literally talked about what she wanted at her funeral and where she wanted to be buried and all of the things. Open communication is really important. I also am blessed with really good friends. And when I was panicking and when I had times that I couldn't move and was laying on my floor, I had friends that would listen. Thank God, even though it was for sure too much for them to handle. And I had this weird family on Instagram. Then it was very small where I could feel like, you know what, I am dealing with something so dark and serious and intense, but I need to like release it into the world. So I'll post something. And I still do that. When I have bad days, I turned to Instagram because it's hard to reach out to a friend and expect a lot from them. I always worry about being too much and being a burden. That's one of my flaws. But if I post something, people can choose to reach out to me instead.
Right. And then you're opening up the floor and you're giving an opportunity for other people to reach out, so you don't feel like you're becoming a burden onto somebody else by reaching out to them.
Exactly. And that's really how it started, is I would just kind of post on my stories, like, I'm having a really rough day. And then people would talk to me and I was like, well, this is cool. Like, it's kind of magical in that way.
But I think also it's not, I don't see it as you reaching out. I see it as you really informing the public about what it's like. And I think it's important that you do admit that you're having bad days. Like, you lost a parent, for Pete's sake. Like, you can't just have butterflies and rainbows coming out of your ears all day. I don't think that's healthy, even if it was possible.
Yeah. And I do. And I definitely did more than when I was in the thick of it, of like, I'd be laying on the floor and I would like post a selfie and be like, everything sucks, which is extreme and dramatic, but I did it. And it worked for all of us. I literally would like post on my Instagram story when the ambulance would be outside of our house and be like, this is my reality, folks. And it was a lot. It was obviously a big thing to handle, but I sat there and I was just like, I need to post this because this is a situation a lot of people face and nobody else is ever going to post something like that. And you can argue that maybe you shouldn't, but I just felt like I needed people to know that other people out there go through these types of things. Because my whole thing, this whole experience from 3 years ago, is like, this is my story is not that unique. So many people go through cancer and losing someone. Not everybody goes through taking care of their mother like I did, true. But a lot of people lose people. And I just felt like, okay, maybe I could be like the everyman. Maybe I could be the person to other people that they should feel less alone, because my experience obviously is really similar in a lot of ways to other people's. And I think there's nothing in this world better than being validated by knowing that somebody else out there knows what you're going through and understands it. And it might be as simple as them liking a picture of yours or like sending you a heart emoji, but you know that they get it. And sometimes that makes a huge difference. When I was sitting in the hospital and like freaking out, just a simple heart emoji from somebody sometimes would like make my entire day different.
Just to know that there's somebody there.
And somebody who might understand.
Now that you've unfortunately experienced an experience with death, what is your view of death?
That's something that I'm still struggling with. And that's been my biggest struggle. I am very spiritual. I feel a big connection to God and religion. But death is very murky to me. And it's a concept that's very hard for me to grasp. And I know a lot of people have a lot of really beautiful ideas about feeling, you know, your loved ones all around you and feeling connections and being able to speak to them and all these things. And I'm not there yet. There are moments that weird things happen and I can see my mom in them, but it's not like I feel this energy of having her, you know, walking around me. I don't feel connected to the idea of any sort of afterlife, to be honest. I want to feel connected to that, but I just don't. And I kind of never have, because I'm a very logical thinker. And to me, this like, you know, place in the sky where everything is magical just doesn't resonate with me. But
the concept is very abstract.
Yeah, it's a very abstract.
It's not something that you can logically understand. So that makes a lot of sense.
I also have always been the type of person that's okay with not having an answer for everything, which I think is unique, because I think a lot of people my age get frustrated with religion, or, you know, more of the Orthodox world specifically, because there are certain things we might not have the most satisfactory answers to. I, as a person, my relationship to religion is that I don't need the most amazing answer for everything. I feel connected. So I don't understand what happens when a person dies. All I know is that they are gone from the earth that I can comprehend. And I am also okay with not knowing. That is something that I'm fine with. It doesn't bother me the way that I think it would bother a lot of other people.
Do you think that you had a harder time while your mother was sick, or that you're having a harder time currently now that she's gone?
I think the experiences can't be compared, because, at least for me, because when I had her and she was sick, it was so intense. I was running myself into the ground. I can't even begin to explain the situation we were in for those months. It was just pure chaos. So in a lot of ways, it was harder then, because it just wasn't healthy. And I was so run down and dealing with something so stressful and spending way too much time around doctors and hospitals and nurses and all the rest. But on the other hand, and like barely sleeping, I had to schedule times to shower. Like, it was crazy. But now on the other side, obviously it's incredibly difficult, and I don't have her. And I also had to relearn everything about the world, which is also something I talk to people a lot about, and they've told me that they felt the same way. After I lost my mom, it felt like somebody adjusted the way that my eyes see the world. Like, it felt like the saturation was like turned down and the brightness was turned down, and purple wasn't purple anymore. And then I had to relearn what purple was. And it kind of felt like everything in the world was tilted like 2% sideways. And I just had to get used to everything being exactly the same, but just a tiny bit tilted. And I still feel that way. I still wake up sometimes and look around me and I'm like, why does everything look weird? And I'm still figuring out how to be in this world. It's very strange. I always think back on like TV shows always have those one episode with the protagonist, like, what happens if I don't exist tomorrow? And they kind of like wake up the next day and they don't exist, and they go throughout their day and they see that their friends are really different without them, and their family actually is. And then they learn that they really do matter. Like, it happens in a lot of like teeny bopper shows that I used to watch. That's what I'm living. That's what I'm experiencing. I'm seeing my mom doesn't exist anymore, and I know how much it affects me. But because of the place she held amongst her friends and amongst the community in Cleveland, my mom actually like ran a bunch of programming, had a big place as a person in the community, I see how it's affecting so many other people too. So the world kind of is different, and I'm still figuring out what that means. But before I had her. So it's kind of an impossible question to answer.
Okay. That's definitely fair. Now that you've explained it, that totally makes sense. Something else I was thinking about, you mentioned in the beginning something about having a hard time adjusting to the lack of panic and the lack of adrenaline rush. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So because of, I'm going to have to get just a touch into some like scary medical things to explain why it was so much panic. Due to some things that happened, my mom developed this bleeding issue. And every time that she would bleed, it was 100% an emergency. And we would have to call 911 right away or rush her to the hospital in whatever way. She would need transfusions, care, the whole works. This happened, honestly, like every 3 days. There were times that she was in the hospital for a long period of time. There were times that we went back and forth. It was it just depended. And that's why she needed 24/7 watch, because it could happen when she was sleeping. It could happen at any time. So for that, those 5 months, besides all of the other things going on, it was a constant waiting for the next time that she was bleeding. A lot of times that happened, you know, at 11 p.m., just as I was going to sleep, my father would run up the stairs and tell me, and it was like, when I went right into go mode. I knew exactly where the bag is that we needed to take, what needed to go in it, that she would need her sitter and her Tehillim. It was calling 911. I called 911 every single time. It was this intense chaos. It happened sometimes when I was alone with her. It would happen at 3 p.m. and I would be texting my manager and boss from the ambulance. I'm on my way to the hospital, which is a crazy relationship to have when you work in a super corporate company, but it's what I had to do. So I had, besides just every day taking care of her, where there was a lot of medical attention she needed that I was in charge of, besides that, besides, you know, regular emotional thing, besides regular, you know, appointments, there was always this constant fear of when is the next time she would be bleeding and would we have, when is the next time we need to rush and go and do all these things. After she passed, after Shiva, after I came back home to my apartment in New York, I used to wake up consistently the middle of the night and like jump out of my skin. Like, and then it would take me 5 minutes to realize, Ricky, she's not alive anymore. Nobody's bleeding. There's no 911 to call. You're fine. Everything is fine. For a really long time, every time I heard sirens, which in New York, for anybody who lives in New York, you know that's every 5 minutes, I would have a panic attack. I would freak out because I would think, like, they're outside my house. I lived really in constant fear of this condition. My whole family did. And it took me a very long time to cycle out of that. So that was the first part of, like, this intense panic, which is insane. But on the other hand, I had to go from taking care of my mom so completely for most of the hours in a day, which is a very fulfilling job. You know, it was a huge mitzvah. It was something that was so important. I really did save her life a few times. There were some really bad times with bleeding where we had, it was a rush to get 911 there to get her to the hospital. There was a time she was walking and passed out, and I caught her as she was falling down. Like, there were some really tangible moments of like, oh my God, I think I just saved my mom's life. But, and that's obviously like the most rewarding experience. That is so fulfilling. It is incredible to sit there and know like I helped someone that I loved or love so much. I helped them so completely, and I did everything I could possibly ever do for this person. And beyond that, I had meaningful conversations with her all the time, constantly. I sat with her till she fell asleep. Sometimes she would send somebody up to come get me. One of the last things she ever said to me in the hospital was, she sent a nurse to go find me because I had stepped out for a few minutes because I was really stressed out. And she took my hands and she looked at me and she said, I'm sorry that I depend on you too much. But that in turn is a very rewarding sentence to hear from someone. I was so honored that I could do that for my mother, who gave me so much. Besides just giving me my life, she gave me so, so much. And then I came back to New York, back to, you know, a singles community. I came back to friends who I love dearly, but I came back to not the nicest apartment, not this like super fulfilling life. I love my job more than anything, but it cannot compare to that type of situation. And I had to really learn to find meaning again in the small things, in regular life. And I had to figure out how to find inspiration around me without having like a ticking clock over my head, without having these sirens in my ears, without knowing that, you know, I would go downstairs and take care of the most important person in my life. I had to just dial it back like 80% and figure out how to feel fulfilled again.
So what are some things that you started to do that help you feel fulfilled?
It took a long time. initially it took just time. I needed to have time to cycle out of where I was and to let the panic kind of recede. You know, once I started sleeping through the night and being less afraid, once I started feeling more like a regular person who got dressed every morning, who went to work every day, who existed in this world, then little pieces of me started coming back where, you know, I would look up at the sky and I would see something, a cloud shaped in a cool way, or, you know, I talked to a lot of friends. I'm very, very close to one of my parents' friends. I talk to her a lot. I talk to her whenever I'm really scared. And I talked to her about this very topic once. And I said to her, like, don't know what to do because everything in the world just feels meaningless. I think I actually spoke to her about this during Shiva. And she said to me, like, well, think about it this way. As humans, we need to give ourselves certain things. You know, we need to have a shelter over our head. We need food. We need rest. We need comfort. A lot of those things take money. So at the very, very least, maybe at the simplest level, what you can think of is you're working and your work is allowing you to make money and take care of yourself and provide basic human needs. Maybe that's meaning enough. I started there. I started with, I'm providing basic human needs for myself. Naturally, over time, I just started seeing things. I started noticing things. And I started to remember who I was as a person, which is a small stuff kind of person. I joked today on my Instagram that I do sweat the small stuff. I remember walking out of my apartment on the day that was Shloshim. Marked 30 days after her passing. And the sun was very low in the sky. And I took a picture as soon as it happened, and it was shining so bright and casting like amazing shadows all over the place and just really lighting things up. And it felt like the world was still kind of faded a little bit to me, but for a second I saw everything in like full brightness again. I remember taking a deep breath and feeling like, okay, it's been 30 days. I'm starting to feel a little bit more like myself. The sun is shining. I'm healthy. I'm going to figure this out. And then I went to work and I figured it out.
Wow. Wow. You're just amazing. I mean, I know it's weird to hear somebody say it, but I'm really inspired by what you have to say. And I just have one last question.
Sure.
You clearly had a very, very strong relationship with your mother, and you've spoken to her about a lot of things, and you had a level of connection and relationship that not everyone has, not even with parents, but with anyone. Want to know if there was one thing that you can impart and on other people and inspire other people with, that you learned from your mother, what would that be?
Talk. I think we forgot how important talking to each other is, with your phones away, with everything turned off, just sitting side by side and talking. Every time I went home, every time I was home, every Friday night for as long as I can remember, I would sit with my mom on the blue couch that is still in the front and in like our living room. It's there, it's very prominent. She would sit on one side, I would sit on the other, and we would talk for hours about everything. And she would mostly just ask me questions about things, but I would just rattle off about everything. And it could have been that I spoke to her about something so silly, like, hey, I watched this really crazy conspiracy theory video because I'm weird and things like that interest me. Like, literally everything. We had a rule that she should never ask me something that she didn't want an honest answer to, because I was never going to lie to her. And because there are things that not every parent needs to know about their child. They're just things that you don't want to know. And she was very careful because she knew I wouldn't lie. And the truth is, we did talk about some things that might have been shocking and might be hard to, for other parents to hear. But she kept up the most open line of communication. I called her in times that I think most daughters would not call their parents. I spoke to her in the most open way. I spoke to her like a friend, and I really felt like she was a friend. And my brother, it was the same way with him. We both felt like no matter what, we could tell our mom and she would understand and she would figure it out. And that, I think, is really important. I actually, weirdly enough, have had moms reach out to me for advice with their daughters. And I feel very uncomfortable, to be honest, because I'm not a mom. So I kind of feel like I'm really not in the right area to ever tell a mom what to or what not to do. Like, I just think that because I'm just not there. So it feels really unfair for me to ever comment on somebody else's parenting. But I talked as much as I could, you know, as comfortable as I felt speaking from the voice of a daughter about every single time, just saying, you know, keep up communication. It's so important. And I want every child to grow up feeling like they can go to their parents for everything. And I think that really only happens when you stay calm, cool, and collected as much as possible. My parents definitely freaked out too sometimes. Like, nobody is perfect. But if you can stay open and relatively relaxed and talk and listen and not enforce so many rules and be gentle with things, I think that's so important. My parents really let me explore things, even though they didn't always like that. I grew up doing theater. That meant that that Kolisha was a problem. That meant that Shomrigia was maybe a problem. That sometimes meant that Snoot was maybe a problem. But I was in high school. I didn't care. My dad certainly cared, but he didn't stop me. He let me figure it out. Originally, I didn't want to go to seminary, and my parents were so mad. They were so unhappy. They wanted, of course, this child to like go to seminary, go to Stern, do all the normal things. But they stood back and they let me figure it out. Eventually, I did go to seminary, skipped the Stern part. But like, they let me do what I needed to do. And they trusted me. That's also important, I think, to actually have trust that you raised your kids correctly. If you trust yourself and you trust your kids, I think that will go so far. I was a good kid. I never did anything wrong. My parents really had no reason not to trust me. The worst I ever did in high school was like drink a little bit of Bartonura at my friend's house. Like, that's pretty tame.
Oh yeah.
And they let me do what I needed to do. And I grew up knowing that my parents trusted me, which in turn, by the way, meant that I would never betray their trust because I knew they really trusted me and that if I broke it, I would be heartbroken. Because how do you betray someone like that who's given you so much leeway?
Right.
Well, yeah. Just, I guess, be open and trust each other.
Okay. And if people want to hear more about your Aviloot Diaries, see more of you, how can they find you?
I'm on Instagram as my name, Ricky Steiner. I post on and off. There are times that I post a ton. There are times that I take breaks. Instagram is not my life. It's just a place that I go when I need to share, when I feel like it. It's just fun. It's, I guess, a hobby. So don't get frustrated when there's like not constant content coming out. But it's all on there. There's a lot to go back through. I started really sharing this stuff like over a year ago. And the speech that I gave at my mother's funeral, which really is me in a nutshell and is my experience in a nutshell, it's not quite what people would expect. That is linked in my bio. And eventually, I will start sharing more of my writing and my thoughts, but it's a work in progress. I'm just, you know, I'm just living my life. So I'm kind of just like sharing as things pop into my head. I have no plan. Sometimes I post things and my friends are like, what are you doing? And I'm just like, I don't know. We'll see how this goes today.
Listen, I think that's why people like you, because you're genuine and you're honest and you're really, even though you might not think so, but I know deep down you do, you are inspiring people and you really are helping people. So I thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I mean, yeah, I don't feel that. And I sort of never want to feel that, because I think when you start thinking that you're inspiring, it kind of becomes a slippery slope. But every time someone messages me, tells me that they connect to my writing, connect to me, find me inspiring, I can't explain the feelings I have. I get emotional. I've cried over messages. I screenshot a lot of messages. My phone is mostly screenshots, to be honest, of like people's messages, and I read through them because it is comforting to me. And it is the most incredible experience to know that my writing, which is something that I've done since I was young, I was always sitting there writing and I never ever shared it. And it is like my first love, so to speak. It is beyond incredible to me to know that people connect to it. And my words, because now I've been like sharing videos here and there, and it's fun that people are on the other side and they care and they're listening and they connect to it.
Yeah. And if you guys want to hear more, again, check out at Ricky Steiner. Ricky, can you spell that for us?
RickiSteiner.
Okay. Lots of I's and then the E before the I, Steiner. Got it? Thank you so much again for coming on. This has been really enlightening and inspiring for me, and I'm sure for people who are listening.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's kind of crazy that I'm doing this, but exciting. And I'm excited to hear what people think and to answer, you know, anyone's thoughts and questions should they come up. And it's just a really cool experience to be able to share this with people. And I know that my mom would be really excited by it.
For more WOV content, make sure to subscribe to the WOVlife.com and Berriana.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at Berriana.